Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's me and the Biz. Hey. Yo, it's me and the Biz.
Back with you, another edition of the Degenerate Hawkeyes podcast. Trent and Biz, as we talk Hawkeye football with you. And a disappointing one once again as Iowa falls at the hands of Wisconsin, 27-7, the final. Biz, I think you said it very succinctly as he texted me as we're getting ready for the show today. What the hell was that?
Sadly, I don't know an answer to that, Trent, but you said disappointing. That's putting it kindly. I guess the only good thing you can say is at least you weren't there in person. Not only was I there, but our seats ended up being, we were in the second row, which if anybody that tells you that sitting in the second row is a good idea, it's just not. We could only see about half the field, but we were down low and got the up close and personal view of that debacle. So, you know, as an Iowa fan, Trent, I think we both know, and any true Iowa fans know, that every Iowa season is going to have its ups and downs and going to have its twists in the road. But not sure if I can ever remember the roller coaster getting quite as violent as it has over the last month. We went from the highest of the highs, being number two and talking about can this team make the playoff, to now wondering can they win another game this year. And like I said, there's always highs and lows in Iowa football, but this is taking it to the extreme over the last few weeks.
You know, there's so many frustrating elements to get into and talk about here. I know quarterback is among them, offensive line, offensive play calling, and we'll get to all of that, but you're exactly right. Just the roller coaster that it is. You think back to some of the great moments at Iowa, some of the great teams of the Ferentz era, but there was always disappointment along with it. From recently, 2015, that hard-fought game against Michigan State, and then the sour taste that you have. Even as fun as it was to go to the Rose Bowl, the actual game experience was a little bit different with Christian McCaffrey and company. 2002, perfect in the regular season, except for a loss against Iowa State. 2004, down in Tempe, just getting absolutely obliterated in that game before they come back, run off seven straight, and win their last Big Ten title. That's right, 17 years ago, the last time that happened. So even in the greatest moments of certainly our memories, even going back to 1985, there's also some negatives that go along with every one of those seasons.
Well, the trade-off for being an Iowa fan and having to deal with those rough moments is that generally, as an Iowa fan, there's always hope. You're always, always competitive, and generally we're pretty much always in the game in the fourth quarter. And that's what made Saturday so depressing and so disappointing, is for the first time in a long time, there was a regular season Iowa game where it just felt hopeless. I mean, that game was over at halftime. I know we technically made it a game a little bit in the third quarter, but did anybody really think we had any chance of coming back in the second half? I know I didn't. And, you know, it just felt hopeless, which that's something you just don't have as an Iowa fan. I mean, usually, like I said, the trade-off for having the type of team we have is that we're never going to blow people out of the water. We're never going to be absolutely dominant, but we're usually always competitive, and that just wasn't the case on Saturday. I mean, that first half, we weren't. First half was as ugly of a half as you can get as a Hawk fan. It was embarrassing. I mean, just we couldn't get out of our own way, and you know, that just doesn't happen very often. So, you know, the thing I noticed being there in person and being down close, it looked like a team, especially on the offensive side, that had just completely lost its confidence. I mean, it just the body language of that offense, just across the board, the offensive line, Petras, even Goodson, and especially Tyrone Tracy, the body language was just terrible. I mean, just watching them walk back to the huddle and, you know, watching them just in between plays, I could have told you 5 minutes into that game we were in trouble. We just didn't have a lot of – what great body language from the beginning, and obviously once things began to snowball, it got ugly quickly.
So the first half you mentioned, one first down came late in the half, 1-7 on third downs, negative 13 yards rushing, 17 total yards in the game, 5 punts, a penalty, and 3 fumbles lost. And a frustrating element to me is those turnovers, because without them, could this have been a 10-7 game in the fourth quarter, and at least you have a chance? I was not good enough. They don't have to be perfect, but they just can't do that. They can't turn it over. Ivory Kelly Martin, why is he in the game there? He's had fumbling issues all season long. Why is Max Cooper, a guy that hasn't touched a punt in a game in, 3 years? Why is he the guy that is back there trying to return a punt with Jones out? Just time after time after time, it's infuriating that you have guys in this spot that, for all intents and purposes, shouldn't be out there in a game that you seemingly have to win the division.
Well, and, you know, everybody knows about the big mistakes, the obvious fumbles and the terrible offensive line play, but just little things. First drive of the game, Spencer Petras throws an absolute dime on 3rd and 7 to probably our best receiver, mm-hmm. Laporta, and he just drops it. I mean, the perfect pass, puts it right on the money, drops it, series over. You know, second possession, we get to 3rd and 3, we run a perfectly planned play on a quick slant to Goodson, and can't hit a simple 5-yard slant. I mean, Wisconsin was going to give it to us. They didn't even defend it. And we just basic things like that. I mean, we talk about it all the time. The margin for error for Iowa football is so small. You know, that game's different if we just come out early and make the plays they were willing to give to us. I mean, they're similar to us. They're going to give you some yards from time to time and make you earn it. But if they're going to give you the yards, you got to take them. And we can't even do that right now. It's, you know, Trent, when – you know, we talk about how brutal Saturday was. You know, when you ask the big picture question of how brutal was it, who do you got to go to?
Snap boy, he's got the information.
He does. So I asked him 2 simple questions. One, when was the last time Iowa scored 7 points or less in back-to-back games? Ooh. And the other related question, when was the last time we lost back-to-back games by 17 or more points? So you ready for the sad answers?
Sad answers. So you said first the first part of the question there, last time they scored 7 or less in back-to-back games. My guess would have to be you'd have to go back to the early Ferentz era. I'd probably have to go back to 99. Am I right?
You hit the nail on the head. It was Ferentz's 4th and 5th games, right, as an Iowa coach. First Big Ten games, if you remember, 49-3 at Michigan State. And I'm not joking when I say that game could have been 100-3 if Nick Saban didn't decide to be nice to us.
We watched that game at the Vine.
And we did, yeah.
That was the infamous hot rod from our roommate Boner. That was when it came out that day.
That is correct. Good memory. So that was more enjoyable than the game itself.
Yes,
so
it was. 49-3,
then turned around and lost 31-7 to Penn State. So, yeah, you got to go back to the very beginning, to the 4th and 5th games of the Ferentz era to see inept offense to that level. It's been 22 years since we've looked this bad on the offensive side in back-to-back games. So.
Hey, Hot Rod, another beam and coke.
and then about 6 more after that. So.
what a day. What a day. All right, so let's go to the second part of the question.
17-plus. So that's happened 4 times, or this was the 4th time it's happened, with the first time being the 2 games we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Happened in 99, happened again in 2000, and then the most recent time it happened was 2017, where we lost to Indiana, or 2007, sorry, to the 2007 season, which was a debacle of a year. We ended the year losing to Western Michigan, but middle of the year, we lose 38-20 to Indiana, and again, Penn State 27-7. So you got to go back 14 years to have back-to-back games where we got our butts kicked as bad as we did the last 2 weeks. So like I said before, usually as an Iowa fan, there's always hope. So I think that's kind of the biggest concern right now. It feels kind of hopeless right now. So we'll wait a while, Trent. We'll continue to mope for a little while. But at the end here, we will talk about some hope and try to end on a high note. But that's the stat boy info on just how bad it was the last couple weeks for the Hawks, and especially this last week.
It was ugly, and there's no two ways about it. It was as bad as it can be. And you mentioned that hopeless feeling that you just don't get that often. And I was hopeless in the Purdue game. Even as he had the touchback, as the guy was reaching out, oh, here they go. Even before the three and out happened right afterwards, it just, you never felt confident. The biggest reason is because you don't have an offensive line. You just don't have an offensive line that can block at a high enough level to even give you a chance. That coupled with maybe, and I'm not being hyperbolic, the least athletic starting quarterback in college football, a recipe for success is certainly not there when you put those two together.
Well, and the offensive line, it's really kind of baffling. I mean, I think we kind of think, well, the offensive line has just been terrible all year, but it really hasn't. You go back to, you know, the first five games, it wasn't a great offensive line, but it was certainly improving. Anybody that watched that Maryland game had to have come away thinking, man, that's an offensive line that's starting to click. Mm-hmm. We ran all over Maryland, and we had great pass protection all game long. I mean, it was that was an offensive line clinic versus Maryland. We scored in 9 straight possessions, and that wasn't that long ago, Trent. That was, you know, a month ago. So, you know, that gives me at least some hope that we can fix this. That it hasn't been 8 games of just absolute atrocious offensive line play. It's been 3 games of progressively worse offensive line. It went from shaky at Penn State to bad versus Purdue to embarrassingly bad versus Wisconsin. So I don't know what the answer is. They're not going to get older all of a sudden. They're a young line. They're not great by any means, but they've done it before. I mean, they you know, especially early in the year, pass protection was actually a strength. I thought, you know, against Iowa State, against Maryland, games like that, against Indiana, we held up pretty good in pass protection. And now, right now, we're a mess. And so hopefully that means it's just a confidence thing and not a competence thing. They're capable of doing it. They're just not real confident right now.
Not at all. You mentioned that pass protection, and it was bad. Any way you slice it, the offensive line struggled in a big-time way. But something I have never seen before with Pro Football Focus and their numbers, Nick DeYoung. 0.02, Dean Worm, 0.0. It's impossible to do something like that. I've never seen it before in pass protection. That was how he graded out. Just absolutely hideous.
I don't pretend to know how they do their grades, but 0.0, I mean, does that mean he literally whiffed on every one? I mean, I feel like if he at least made contact and stopped somebody from running directly through him, don't they have to give him at least a point?
It should be something.
Yeah, so, yeah, and I see it was 9 plays. I mean, I assume that means he didn't do his job on any of the 9 plays, which, again, I mean, just watching him and being up close a couple times, you could just tell there was a deer in the headlights look and feel to him from moment one of that game. And I felt bad for him. I mean, it was just, he shouldn't have played 9 plays. I mean, once he gave up the strip sack, there was no reason for him to play again the rest of the game. And we're stubborn. We keep rotating. And, you know, to me, that's my number one suggestion is pick 5 offensive linemen and just move forward with them at this point. Is it going to be the solution? No, but the rotation isn't working, and it's not going to work. Pick 5 and say, here's our group going forward, and sink or swim with them at this point.
I hate to bring up 1999 because it was, A, a long time ago, and, B, it was not a very fun year, but think back of how they moved the football that year. You know, I went back and watched some highlights, and yes, their highlights are the best plays, and it doesn't tell the whole story, but think about how many bubble screens they ran that year. Think of how many times they went with quick hitters with Liddell Betts, knowing that they weren't going to be able to sustain drives for very long and blocks for very long. And you had Bruce Nelson out there playing left tackle, 260 pounds, before he moved inside and gained 40 pounds and moved to center. You know, you go through and you look at the way that they were able to do it. They at least tried some things. Are they going to try anything? Are they just going to say, hey, this is what we are and we can't adapt? We can't change. This is what our identity is. That's another frustrating aspect about that. Do something. Try something instead of just beating your head against the wall continually and hoping it's going to be different.
I think the biggest problem, Trent, and you just kind of hit on it, back in 1999, the coaching staff knew we were bad, and they knew we had to be creative to get the job done. I think the problem is right now, I think this coaching staff just misevaluated the offensive line and probably misevaluated the offense in general. I think they thought we were going to be a much better offensive team than this. I think they thought Spencer Petras was going to be better, that they thought our wide receivers were going to be better. They certainly thought our blocking was going to be better. And I think that's part of the reason they're doing this, is I truly think, you know, you hear parents talk about it in postgame, you know, the offensive line's close, and that what they see on tape is that, you know, it's not that far away. And, you know, I think they just misevaluated this offense. I think they really thought this was going to be an extension of what we saw the last six games last year, which was a emerging offense that was getting better and not worse. And right now, clearly, it's regressing would be a nice term for them.
Yes, you are right on there. We go from the struggles of the offensive line to the offensive coordinator. Putting this all together, and do you have a mea culpa here? I was right. Brian Ferentz, not the guy for the job.
Well, you know, Trent, I think my comment to you was it's time for me to wave the white flag. I've always been, I don't know if I'd say an apologist, but I've always looked on the bright side, at least, of Brian Ferentz. And, you know, I think at this point, I'm probably the last one to jump off the bandwagon, but I'm ready to do it. And I think you saw that kind of across the board this week. If you read any of the big articles from, you know, Chad Leistikow or Scott Dochterman or especially Mike Halas, if you read Mike Halas's article, I mean, it's a really good article because basically it's just a comparison of where Wisconsin's at with a 38, 39-year-old defensive coordinator compared to where we're at with a 38, 39-year-old offensive coordinator, both in their fifth year in the program. And when you compare it, it's night and day difference. And you know, like I said, I'm probably the last one on the bandwagon, but I've jumped off officially at this point also. There's not much you can say in his favor at this point. I hope he figures it out the next 4 weeks, but you know, what we saw after a bye week and the complete refusal to change anything or to adapt during a game is just, it's depressing. I mean, it's just so yeah, there's my mea culpa, Trent. I'm off the bandwagon as well. I hope they find a way to fix it, but long term, I don't think this is the solution.
Yeah, it feels that direction. And what can change? What can evolve? Is it going to be something where it's going to take Kirk's retirement? We will see on that, because I'm going to guess the conversation with Brian Ferentz's real boss, because he doesn't answer to dad, probably not a whole lot to that conversation. It's not, I don't see Gary Barta going into Kirk's office and say, hey, I'm going to fire your son now.
But you know my opinions on his real boss. Gary Barta isn't going to say or do anything. So the only way this ends is if some NFL team decides, hey, we wouldn't mind having Brian Ferentz back and doing something on the NFL level, and everybody just kind of mutually agrees that that's the best option. I don't think he's getting fired, but I do see potentially there being a mutual parting of the ways, and he goes back to somewhere in the NFL, because I'd be shocked if someone in the NFL wouldn't take him. Are they going to take him as an offensive coordinator? Yeah. Absolutely not. But you know, the NFL likes to bring back old names and old faces, and the Ferentz name carries a lot of respect in the NFL. So to me, that's the best case scenario. Is end of the year, everybody just kind of says, "Oh, let's mutually agree to part ways," and he ends up being the offensive line coach for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I can buy that, and ultimately, probably a good thing for everybody involved. Biz, the offensive line struggles, and we finish up here when we're talking about all these offensive issues with the quarterback, Spencer Petras. It's not all on him. He is down on the list of candidates that are a problem. But with this offensive line, with a backup that I don't think is very good in Padilla, but at least he can move around a little bit, and he looks like he's about 5'7 out there. He maybe gives them a better chance. It's not like they use the strengths of Spencer Petras and that strong arm because, hey, they can't get it down the field, and if they do, is the protection going to be there? Probably not. Is it time at the very least? How short is the leash? Let's go that direction. How short is it this weekend if Iowa struggles in the first half against Northwestern?
To me, if the gap between Padilla and Petras was close, right now is the perfect opportunity to give him a shot, just because you can use the excuse that Petras was banged up at the end of the game. He was. I mean, when he got crunched and went out, it was right in front of us, and he really got crunched. So if there was ever an opportunity to say, let's give Padilla a shot, this is it. But, I don't think it's going to happen, and honestly, I'm not sure it should happen. I don't think Padilla is the answer. I think the only benefit you have is that he can move the pocket a little bit and he can scramble and extend plays, but I don't think he's, again, Petras is about number six on our list of problems right now, which says a lot because he's not had a good year, but he's way down the list when it comes to why we're losing games right now. So it wouldn't break my heart to see Padilla give it a shot, but I don't think it's going to happen. So we'll see. I don't see them benching him mid-game, let's put it that way. I think either Padilla comes in and they use the excuse that Petras is banged up, or they ride Petras out and see what happens.
All right, from quarterback, let's go to this. Best case, worst case scenarios, and you got some little info here. Fill us in, Biz, what you got?
I do, and again, a lot of this comes from Stat Boy, who, I come up with the idea he fills in the gaps, which he really filled them in well here. So, what my thought process was, Trent, Iowa has its ups and downs, and when you look at it, there are 2 years that are remarkably similar to this year as far as great start, brutal middle, and then what happens next. So let's start with the worst case scenario, Trent, because we've obviously been overwhelmingly negative for 20 minutes.
Yep.
So let's stay negative for a few more minutes, but then we'll change gears and start talking positive. So worst case scenario, and I'm talking Kirk Ferentz years only, can you guess which year I picked as kind of the worst case scenario for what could happen down the stretch here?
Is it that 2007 season that you mentioned?
You're close, but no, it's actually the year before, the 2006 year.
Didn't they lose four straight?
2007 was just a bad football team. There was not many positives in 2007. 2006, if you remember, that was a team that had tons of positives. And that's a year, you got Drew Tate's senior year. You've got a team that early in the year hosts game day, loses to number one Ohio State, but then turns around and destroys Purdue by 30 the next week. So midway through the year, you're sitting at 5-1. Only loss is to a dominant number one team. You're ranked 14th in the nation, and you got good vibes all around. And then do you remember what happened to that team down the stretch?
Yeah, I think four straight, right? I mentioned that right at the top. I think four straight losses at the end of the year.
Well, they lost five straight in the Big Ten. Their only win, after being 5-1, their only win was a non-conference midseason matchup against Northern Illinois. But if you remember, 5-1, we go to Indiana. It was our good friend Chris Melton's wedding, and it was I remember watching that while sneaking in out of the way to watch it, and we blew it. We lost 31-28. There was a certain wide receiver that destroyed us. You remember who that was?
James Hardy.
Yeah, this was David Bell before David Bell. James Hardy destroyed us. We throw a pick late in the game, lose 31-28, and from that point, the wheels just fall off. Like I said, lose the last five Big Ten games, including the low point of the year. We lose 21-7 at home to a 3-6 Northwestern team. So kind of similar to what we're going into this week. It was kind of the make-or-break part of the year, and we definitely broke. And that was after that Northwestern game, there was a very famous Kirk Ferentz quote. You remember it at all?
No.
So I'll read it to you. We played like fat cats. I thought we looked like fat cats, and they looked like a hungry team. So it was
the fat cats game.
Yep, it was about as angry as you'll ever see Kirk Ferentz. And it was it was one of the low points, I think, of Iowa football for Kirk Ferentz, where it was a pretty swift drop-off from a team that – had won the Big Ten title a year and a half to a team that was ended the year 6-7 and lost their last five Big Ten games and the bowl game. So worst case scenario is, Trent, is we're looking at a bunch of fat cats that go into Northwestern, get stomped, and then it only gets worse from there. So there's your worst case scenario. Let's cross our fingers and hope that doesn't happen.
Let's get some positivity. What do you got?
Best case scenario, Trent, you don't have to go back too far. There's a season in the relatively near past here that's very, very, very similar.
To what, 2016?
No, even earlier, even more recent than that.
What is it?
2019. So 2 years ago. You kind of forget, but let's look at that team and kind of break them down a little bit. That team started 4-0. Mm-hmm. Again, moved up to number 14, same as 2006. And then started the Big Ten season at the Big House. And you remember what happened the next two games?
After the Michigan game?
No, the Michigan game and then the game after. Just the combined effort of those two games.
Well, I just remember the offensive line being brutal in the Michigan game. I mean, as bad as it's ever been, and probably not much better after that.
Correct. So we went at Michigan and then at home versus Penn State. This sounds unbelievably similar to what just happened the last 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, offensive line gives up 10 sacks. Offense puts up a total of 15 points, and we get whipped twice. This was the actual quote from the paper that Statboy sent me. A season that seemed to contain such great promise just a couple weeks ago has suddenly become the middle of a donut offensively. Sound a little similar to what we're experiencing right now?
Absolutely.
But here's the positive, Trent. Best case scenario here. What did that team do after those two losses?
Played really well and beat USC in a bowl game.
Yep, they turned it around. They won 6-7. They were 6 inches away from tying Wisconsin and potentially going 7 out of 7. Ended the year scoring 49 points and finished back in the top 15. So, there's your best case scenario is keep fighting. You know, that team was not great the next couple weeks after that, but they put it together. Ironically, again, you talk about a Northwestern game where in 2019, remember Northwestern, we went there and won a brutally ugly 20-0 game where the coaching staff just basically determined we won't do anything offensively, but we know Northwestern can't do anything offensively, and we'll just bleed the death out of that game, which I could see them easily doing this Saturday as well. So there's your best case scenario, and you don't have to look back too far. 2 years ago, this team was in the same exact situation. Brutal offense, brutal offensive line, everyone angry at the offensive coordinator, and we found a way to fix it. So but let's just do that again.
Do that again. I'm in. I am absolutely in for that. Let's finish this season on a strong note. So why should we be hopeful? Is it just because Ferentz has done it before? Is it as simple as that?
It is, Trent. And, you know, we talked about hope earlier, and that's hopeless right now. But all you got to do is look at what this staff's done each of the last 4 years, and I think we can end the podcast with some hope, Trent. Because go back, this staff has been together with Brian Ferentz, offensive coordinator, and you know, the changes we made for this is the fifth year. Each of the 4 years, there was some clear adversity that this team faced every single year, and they bounced back every year. 2017, we were struggling, but we ended the year with a 56-14 beatdown against Nebraska and then a bowl victory. 2018, we lose 3 in a row in the middle of the year, including a couple brutal losses. The Penn State one and then at home versus Northwestern. Again, end the year winning 3 straight, including a bowl game. 2019, we just discussed it. 2 brutal losses in the middle, bounce back, win 6 out of 7. And then obviously last year, you start 0-2, and you come back and win 6 in a row. So you want to talk about hope, Trent. This staff has shown when things are down and things look hopeless, they have been able to rally the troops, and the team hasn't quit. So they've done it 4 straight years. Let's believe and hope it's going to happen a 5th straight year.
Hope. That's what we have. Hope. And change will come with that. All right, Biz. Let's go to our picks this week as I went 3-0. I'm right back in it. Just a half game back as we make our way into November. Getting hot at the right time, Biz.
I did not go 3-0, but I did hit my best bet again. I've been good at those and terrible at everything else.
No bonus picks for your best bet, though I also hit mine. Well, of course I did. I went 3-0. So here we go, Biz, and we kick things off as we do each and every week with the Iowa game. Hawkeyes currently a 12-point favorite in the game. The over-under sits at 40.5, and I'm going to go with that hope and that optimism. Northwestern stinks. I get it. Bad matchup. We've seen it before. This offense, they're going back to another quarterback change. They can't do a whole lot. Iowa still has a really good defense. A really good defense. I'm going to lay the points here. Iowa finds a way. It'll probably be much like that game that you mentioned a couple years back. 20-0. But give me the Hawks. I'll lay the 12.
Well, we'll flip-flop from last week. I took the Hawks and you took the under last week. So I'll take the under this week. For the reasons we just talked about, I think this coaching staff, they don't care about style points. They care about coming out of Evanston with a win. And I think they know we can lean on our defense, and as long as we don't go -3 in the turnover area for the third straight week, we're going to beat Northwestern. So I think they're going to be ultra-conservative. They're going to try to establish the running game. They're not going to do – I mean, it's not going to be a game where anyone's going to be real excited about the game plan, but I could see it being similar to what happened in 2019. It could be 20-0 again. So give me under 40.5 and an ugly victory.
Under 40.5, there is the pick from Biz. We go to the national game of the week, and in fact, the only game this week involving two teams ranked in the top 25. How's this happen in November? Absolutely hideous, but here we are. It's Auburn, Bo Nix going to Texas A&M. The Aggies favored by 4.5, and I'm going over, Biz. I've started to play around a little bit more with the totals, as you like to do from time to time. I'm going to go over here. Bo Nix is playing better. A&M defense is solid, but not great by any means. 49.5, the number. I'll go over in A&M Auburn.
Give me A&M. I don't feel confident about it, but give me A&M getting 4.5. I mean, the SEC is just brutal. And you look at Auburn's schedule, they played LSU, Georgia, Arkansas, and Ole Miss. And at some point, you just got to wear down a little bit. A&M is coming off a bye week. They're at home. They got all the momentum in the world after winning 3 in a row. So, give me A&M 4.5, but it's not one that I love by any means.
And that's the side that I would lead on as well. We finish up with our best bet of the week. The Horned Frogs get it done. Well, maybe not get it done in terms of a win. Big rivalry matchup for TCU, though, against Baylor. They're getting 6 points. It's at home. Gary Patterson's out. They asked him to stay. He told everybody to go blank themselves. They asked him to stay through the end of the season. I think they win one for the Gipper, even as he's not there. TCU plus the 6 in an emotional game.
Well, I'm going back to the well with Arkansas Alley and the Woo Pig Sueys. Huh. Over the years, I don't think I've ever gotten one wrong when I've taken Arkansas as my best bet of the week. And this is one. They're playing Mississippi State. We've talked about before. Trying to figure out Mike Leach teams is almost impossible. They look great last week. They're riding high. That's usually when you can count on Mike Leach to have a head-scratcher. And so I think this is going to be one of those just complete butt-whoopings. Same thing I talked about A&M. Arkansas is coming off playing Arkansas Pine Bluff and then a bye week. So they're rested. Mississippi State's going through a grind of a schedule right now. And for the same reason, I think Arkansas will just decide we're going to pile up 400 yards rushing and put a whooping on them. So Woo Pig Suey, and shout-out to Arkansas Alley with this pick.
Razorbacks, Woo Pig Suey, that is where we go. Our picks this week, Biz on the under, Iowa Northwestern, Texas A&M, and Arkansas with his SEC love. I got Iowa laying the 12, A&M Auburn over, and TCU plus the 6. Our picks here, and Biz, well, I don't think you're coming to Des Moines on Thursday, but got a little special episode of the Degenerate Hawkeyes podcast coming up on Thursday, as I'm going to be out at Wellman's. And Circus Sports, who, Biz, I know I've told you about, and all of our gambling degenerates out there, was out there in July, got to see the new casino that's down on Fremont Street. Certainly looks out of place. A lot classier than anything down there. But they're here in the state of Iowa now with their app. Best odds you're going to find anywhere is through them. If you like betting golf, if you just like playing parlays, teasers, the best odds come through Circus Sports. I'll be out there for their big launch party on Thursday night doing a live podcast. So for listeners out there, stop on by. If you haven't downloaded the app, though, I'll tell you, wait till you get there. It might be something a little special hanging out for you on Thursday evening, 7 o'clock. I'll be doing the live podcast. You going to come to town?
Well, if these guys want to pay me to come to town, I'll do about anything, Trent. I've got no pride. If they want to pay me to be there, I'll be there. So.
Yeah, they'd come out of my bottom line. I don't know if that's going to be happening, Biz.
But then they'd have to hire someone to coach a all-important sixth grade girls basketball league game on Thursday night. So I don't know. Unless I can coach remotely.
Yes, I'm sure you could. Technology has advanced very, very far. And you don't have to worry. I mean, I've heard great things about you. You beat some big-time names over there in Eastern Iowa, some of the coaches you've gone head-to-head with.
Yeah, it's there's some interesting folks over here. There's youth sports is an interesting thing. You get some, I pride myself on it. I've never gotten a technical. I probably just jinxed it by saying that. But people that know me know that I'm not afraid to share my opinions. But I'm proud to say I generally, for the most part, keep calm and collected as a youth coach. It's some of the people that are over on this side of the state definitely do not do that. So it's a unique group, let's put it that way.
That's a good way to put it, Biz. All right, we got Biz's Beat coming up here in just a moment. Again, that's Thursday night at Wellman's in West Des Moines. Stop on out, have a beer, and maybe a little bit more on us. What's that? 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock, Wellman's is where that will be happening. Also, Biz, I don't know if this is part of Biz's Beat, but we were having fun last night texting about the craziness that is this Texas assistant coach's girlfriend that's a stripper, the monkey, and a Halloween party. You're a lawyer. As a lawyer, would you tell your client to videotape the cage of the monkey and put it up on social media? Probably not the best one from, what was her name? What's her stripper name?
Pole Assassin, I believe, wasn't it?
Pole Assassin. Just, if you haven't seen the story, folks, just put a Google search in. It is so many layers of incredibleness. College football, it always delivers.
Well, and the best thing about it is, if you read the comments section to like the initial tweet explaining what happened, the comments are just pure gold. I mean, for the most part, I'm somebody that tries to avoid reading the comments anywhere on Twitter, because usually it's just a cesspool of anger and negativity. But, man, there are some funny, funny comments talking about this whole situation. So I kind of went down the wormhole of reading all of them, and there's some, the whole situation, again, it makes you thankful kind of for what Iowa has. I'm very, very, very confident that LeVar Woods, A, does not own a monkey, and B, would not get in anywhere near this type of a situation. So again, there's things about Iowa you can be frustrated about, but I'm confident that our coaching staff will never embarrass us in that way.
All right. With that, Biz, what a story. College football. Let's get out of here. It's time for Biz's Beat.
Hey, kids. Gather around for Biz's Beat of the day. Okay, here's Biz's Beat of the day.
Well, Biz's Beat was not about the stripper monkey, Trent. It's actually about another thing you brought up earlier, and that's the unceremonious departure, or whatever you want to call it, of Gary Patterson. You know, the reason it's Biz's Beat is, I think everybody probably knows, that behind Kirk Ferentz, Gary Patterson was next in line as far as college football seniority. And, it just gets you thinking. You talk about Gary Patterson, you talk about Frank Beamer, and you talk about even Stoops. It is really, really, really hard to stay at the same place right now in college football for, 10 years, much less 20 or 23 like Kirk has done now. And it just gets you thinking, I hope and cross my fingers and hope that somehow, some way, Kirk can find a way to right the ship smart enough to at some point, doesn't have to be this year, but at some point in the near future, go out on your own terms. We just saw Gary Patterson 6 weeks ago. He was 2-0, and now not only was he removed, but I think everybody probably agreed it was probably the right decision for him to be removed. Right. And, we've had the ups and downs of Iowa football, but there's been a lot more ups than downs with Kirk Ferentz, and I hope that he can find a way to get a few more ups, and then walk out on a high note. I just don't want it to end the way it did with some of the other legends of football. So let's hope what happened to Gary Patterson is not going to happen to Kirk Ferentz at some point in the next 2 years. So right the ship, and then walk away into the sunset.
Well said, Biz. We're all hoping for that. Iowa back on the field again on Saturday evening, 6 o'clock kickoff in Northwestern. And we'll see you over in Iowa City on the 13th with the Gophers. We'll preview that one next week. We got some basketball. The exhibition season starts on Friday night. Regular season then starts a week from today, next Tuesday, at a 9 o'clock tip-off against Longwood. Looking forward to that. Biz, we'll talk a little hoops next week and, of course, recap the Northwestern game. We'll do it then.
All right, go Hawks.